Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What's up, everybody? I'm Najee Adams.
And I'm Hunter Jacobs.
And you're listening to the Hoop Bowl Nets podcast. So we're back with another episode, and this time we're going to keep it simple, short, and sweet. We're going to go over the Nets' loss to the Pacers, give our first impressions of the Nets 4 games into the season, and go over the DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen relationship that is flourishing for the Nets. But before we do that, let's get to the intro. Make sure y'all subscribe to the Hoopball Nets podcast on iTunes. You can look up Brooklyn Nets or Hoopball Nets. Either way, we pop up. Leave a 5-star rating and review. All reviews are getting read on the podcast, so just make sure you leave one. It takes like 30 seconds for y'all, but it helps us out a ton. So there's that. Shout out to Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee Company for being the title sponsor of this podcast and every other Hoopball podcast. You can check them out at High Kona Coffee on Twitter and HawaiianIsles.com. And without further ado, let's get into things. So yes, the Nets did unfortunately give the Pacers their first win of the season. They lost 118 to 108. And just to quickly go over the game, the biggest lead the Pacers had was 16. The biggest lead the Nets had was 7. The problem in this game, once again, was the turnovers. The Nets had 19 compared to the Pacers' 9, so that's a plus 10 for turnovers for the Nets. They did happen to out-rebound them, though. The Nets shot 44.1% from the field, and the Pacers shot 46.9%. 32.3% from 3 for the Nets, 42.3% for the Pacers, and then 61.5% from the free throw line for the Nets and 85% for the Pacers. Going over the box score, we can start with the Pacers, I guess. So
Turner actually got injured pretty early in this game. So the fact that the Pacers were able to win without him, I mean, post defense has not really been their primary issue. To be honest, it's consistently been guards combining for over 40 points. Like Jeremy Lamb and Brogdon at 46 in this game?
I mean, in this one alone, they allow 4 people to score 20 or more points. And Miles Turner, one of their best players, like you said, only played 9 minutes because he got injured. Like, stuff like that is just unacceptable. Domantas Sabonis, 29 points in 36 minutes, 11 of 18 from the field. He knocked down 2 3-pointers, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Malcolm Brogdon, he's having a crazy season. 21
pickup. I think he's the reason that the Bucks are no longer the best team in the East. Losing him is a big loss.
Yeah, I mean, we was arguing about who's better between him and Caris LeVert earlier, but I'm still gonna say it's Caris LeVert. 7 for 19 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, 6 of 6 from the line, 13 assists. He's averaging like 11.2 assists per game, which is a career high for him. He's actually leading the league in assists, 8 rebounds, almost a triple-double. Jeremy Lamb, 25 points on 11 of 19 shooting, extremely efficient, 58% from the field, 7 rebounds. And then the last 20-point scorer for the Pacers was TJ Warren. He had 20 points on 8 of 16 shooting. On to the Nets, they were yet again carried by their 3 best scorers. Kyrie had 28, Caris had 15, and Spencer Dinwiddie had 20.
However, I will say that Caris had a 6 of 18 shooting percentage from the field and had 4 turnovers in this game, so it wasn't his best. Joe Harris shot 5 of 9, so all reliable put up a good line.
Yeah, Joe Harris back at it again, 3 of 6 from the 3-point line. That's our guy. Torian Prince only shot 30% from the field. So he was 2 of 8 from 3, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. Didn't make that big of an impact on the game, but I still think he's going to be a monster this season. Caris LeVert, like you said, 6 of 18 from the field. So not his best shooting performance either. Kyrie, once again, a monster, 28 points in 30 minutes, 11 of 20 from the field. 7 rebounds, 6 assists, only 1 turnover. He's being extremely efficient with his turnover to assist ratio this season. And then Spencer Dinwiddie came off the bench, played 26 minutes, 20 points on 7 of 17 shooting. He was only 1 of 5 from 3, and he was 5 of 6 from the free throw line. Yet again,
he also turned the ball over 4 times. Him and LeVert seem to be the leading people with turnovers. They often have 3 or 4 apiece, but you take it with what you get from them. They're the second and third best scorers on the team, best playmakers behind Kyrie. So
they also have the ball in their hands a ton. And, like, they're not young players, but they're still not veterans. So they're still getting acclimated to the whole game. And it's a whole new system with Kyrie, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for this one.
I mean, it took a while to get going last season, too.
Exactly.
Or there was a stretch when they had lost 9 straight games before going on their tear that led them to the playoffs.
Exactly. And that's what I want to talk about when we get to the first impressions, because I feel like people are going putting way too much into the first 4 games of the season. So DeAndre Jordan started in this game. He played 22 minutes to Jared Allen's 21. This is the second straight game that DeAndre has started. So the Nets have played 4 games. Jared has started 2 of them. DeAndre started 2 of them. He had 17 rebounds, 7 of them being offensive, so he was definitely a monster on the boards this game. When we look at, like, the intangibles of the game, the Nets gave up 118 to the Pacers, which is the most that they've scored the entire season so far. And when you look at defense, it wasn't Jared Allen's best defensive performance. He gave up 22 points to the players that he was guarding and allowed them to shoot 66.7% from the field. And in this game, like the first 4 games, the Nets have relied on the isolation offense. Their big 3 scorers, Dinwiddie, Kyrie, and LeVert, really just slow the offense down. They still pass a lot, which is, they're like top 5 in passing, like the total passes that they've thrown as a team, which is crazy because usually in an isolation system, you don't pass the ball that much. But Kenny Atkinson is really working his magic with this type of system.
Do you think that Jared Allen's going to fall into the Hassan Whiteside type of defense where he's known for blocking shots but not being a good defender?
Having
shot blocking ability?
I mean, I feel like that could be a route that Jared Allen goes, just because he's not like laterally quick. Like when he's defending opponents on the perimeter, he's going to get blown by just because he's athletic, but he's not like, he doesn't have the lateral quickness to keep up with faster defenders. So yeah, I feel like the value that he brings to the team comes from his ability to block shots. So
in terms of isolation, too, that's how they're going to play. They played like that a lot last year because that's just the type of player that Dinwiddie is. Dinwiddie's always going to be an isolation player. He knows how to create space. Kyrie's the same way. So when Kyrie came, you could almost predict that they were going to be a primarily isolation scoring team.
Yeah, and they're going to score in different ways because D'Lo ran the offense last season, and D'Lo and Kyrie, as much as people are saying they're close in skill, they're two very different players, and they're not like, so the way that Kenny runs the offense can't be the same because D'Lo relies a lot on screens and pick and roll, shooting his shots in the mid range, whereas Kyrie, he can really get a bucket from anywhere on the court. So they're going to play different types of games. And so Kyrie and Dinwiddie are top 22 in isolation frequency of any players in the entire league, and Dinwiddie is number 3 behind only LeBron and Harden. So that just shows how much they really are isoing, especially with him coming off the bench. And so that is how the Nets lost to the Pacers. So we can move on to the first impressions of the Nets 4 games into the season. So what I have to say before we get into this is that everyone just needs to calm down, because the Nets, they're 1-3 right now. And they very well could be 0-4. They very well could be 4-0. Every game has been close except this one against the Pacers, I guess you could argue. But it always comes down to a couple of turnovers, a couple of free throws, just miscommunications on offense and defense, which should show you that once they get rolling and they start gelling together, that they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
I believe that the 3 biggest issues that we're seeing so far, and it's the same 3 issues to start last season, and they're fixable, as we saw in the second half of the season. It's poor perimeter defense, poor free throw shooting, and high turnover rate. Because if you look at each of their games, they allowed Ja Morant to score 30 and Dylan Brooks to have over 20 points too. They allowed Alonzo Trier to have 22. Every game they played, they had Lamb and Brogdon over 20. They have not
played. You're right. I forgot that they used to get lit up by guards last season.
Not the big men that have been killing them on the teams other than Sabonis, really. It's mainly been the guards. They did a good job on Jaren Jackson. But the problem is when Ja Morant scores 30 and carries them through the whole last few minutes of the game into overtime, that's an issue.
It is an issue, and that's why I say there.
He's a veteran. He should have been able to overpower Ja Morant in the end of that game.
I mean, I agree. I think that if we're going to pinpoint one loss that the Nets have that they shouldn't, I want to say it's the Grizzlies, because there's no way that you should be giving up 30 to Ja Morant in his third NBA game. That is just unacceptable. So that's where I come to say that my three takeaways from the Nets four games into the season. Number one is that they are really, really, really bad on defense right now.
It's mainly perimeter defense, but overall teams are scoring 122 a game on them, which is the third worst in the league, and they give up the highest three-point percentage too. It seems as though the effort that we were discussing from preseason games actually carried over to the regular season, where we'd see guys not closing out as well as they should and just standing watching the ball.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of it is effort, or like a lot of it is not knowing, like bad defensive, like I don't know how to explain it, but a lot of it is not knowing your opponent. And like a lot of the time in the Pacers game, they were just leaving Sabonis open. DeAndre Jordan would just let him shoot. And granted, Domantas Sabonis isn't Stephen Curry. He's not knocking down shots or anything like that. But
can make it.
You still have to close out. And that's where I come to say that once they start to gel together defensively, they'll be fine. They were, 8-18 through the first couple of games of last season, and they ended up winning 40 games.
It's because after that stretch, they turned things around. That's when D'Lo started taking over. And in this case, I don't know that Kyrie will have to take over, because as we've seen, he can score 50 and they still not win. Like, yes, that's rare, but I think the team overall has to step up on these little things, free throws, turnovers, defense, rather than Kyrie just taking over games.
Yeah, they're giving up. They're top 10 in the field goal percentage allowed to the opposing team, and so that means it's not just perimeter defense that's a problem. Their defense all over the court is a problem. Jared Allen gets fried sometimes in the paint. DeAndre Jordan gets fried sometimes in the paint. I think it just takes time. Like, it's not – they weren't going to come out – I don't know what some Nets fans expected. They weren't going to come out and just be the 2016 Warriors. Like, it's going to take time.
And the second impression is really that they've been great on offense, which you'd
amazing expect. Amazing on offense.
Run team. They're top 12 in offensive efficiency, top 10 in pace. They take a lot of free throws, top 4 in the league in that. And then they grab offensive rebounds. That comes with DeAndre Jordan and points per game, Kyrie Irving. When you get Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan, your offense is going to improve.
Exactly. They're not as pick and roll heavy. Like we said earlier, they run a lot more ISO ball, but they're still top 3 in screen assists per game. And screen assists per game is basically you score off an immediate screen. Like
A lot of that actually is for Joe Harris. Joe Harris is great at running through screens and taking threes.
Takes the same type of threes as like J.J. Redick. Have you ever seen J.J. Redick come off a down screen and pull up as soon as he gets? J.J. Redick,
Korver, those are the type of guys that are pulling threes off of screens.
Exactly. So yes, if there's anything to look forward to is that four games into the season, although a lot of the pieces the Nets have are similar to last season, adding Kyrie in brings a whole different perspective, and they're still really, really extremely good on offense, probably better than they were last season. So I think, if anything, you can expect the offense to take a slight hit going forward in the season and the defense to take a major bump. I don't think they're going to be the worst defensive team in the league.
I think they're going to figure it out, whether it's small rotation changes or just gelling better as a team as the season goes on. I think the defense will improve.
And then My third and final takeaway comes on the in the realm of free throws and turnovers. I think those are the two, outside of obviously offensive and defense, I think that free throws and turnovers are the two biggest issues the Nets are facing right now. So they're bottom three in free throw percentage, even though they're top four in free throw attempts. The way, I don't know how that works, but they take a lot of free throws, they just don't knock them down.
See, the issue with that is, aside from Kyrie, Dinwiddie, and Joe Harris, they don't really have someone that you want taking free throws.
They don't. They don't have a outside of the three players you just named, who's the Nets' best free throw shooter? When you really think about it.
I mean, I guess out of the next wave of players, I'd probably take Taurean Prince.
Taurean Prince, maybe. I would take Karis. He's not a horrible free throw shooter. But
neither of them are knocked down. That's the problem.
I don't think the Nets have any knockdown free throw shooters outside of Kyrie and Joe Harris, maybe. Because even Spencer Dinwiddie, we could have won the, what game was that? The Grizzlies game. We could have won the Grizzlies game if he would have knocked down both free throws. But he split, and that's why we went to OT.
And then turnovers. This was our biggest issue when we were talking about last season.
It's been the Nets' biggest issue for like the past 3 years.
Could Harris handle the ball as much as they're going to give him the ball? Will his decision making be good? And it's not just him. Dinwiddie also. They were due for increased roles last year. How are they going to handle it? And early on, it was exactly what we were saying. They kept turning the ball over. They were near the top of the league. They were giving up points to guards like DJ Augustine and Patty Mills
I completely, you bringing up the throwbacks, because I completely forgot they were getting lit up by those two.
And it's the same issues. I don't know if it's an issue with chemistry, if it's an Atkinson-run team thing. I'm not saying he's a bad coach by any means, but I don't know if it has to do with his system. But they will figure it out again. Kyrie is not someone who turns the ball over a lot, so it's on Dinwiddie and LeVert to figure that out. And a lot of their turnovers, as I'm watching, come off of attempted lob passes.
So many of them. So many of them come off botched lobs, because they go for like screen and rolls with DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen. A lot of them come from Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan. The bench unit, So the big man sets the screen, and like, I think it'll come with, that's another thing that'll come with time, in that they need to learn each other's rhythm and like how DeAndre Jordan cuts to the basket, the right time for Spencer Dinwiddie to throw the lob. Like, that's the type of stuff that you need to play together for more than four games to really understand. And a lot of their turnovers outside of that come from the fact that they play a lot of ISO ball, and when they end up taking bad shots and passing out of it, and the defender just picks it off. Like, a lot of their turnovers come that way. And then, back to free throws, they could have won both the Wolves game if Jared Allen knocks down one. That is the game.
He missed both of his free throws.
That is the game that haunts me this season.
Both of them, they are the best 1-3 team.
Easily. I don't even know what other teams are 1-3, but whatever other teams are 1-3, the Nets are the best team that's 1-3. They're playing down to their opponent's level at this point. That's why I said they very well could be 4-0. It's slight things, slight adjustments that need to be made for this to be a top four, top five seed in the East.
Easily. Yeah, I mean, the other 1-3 teams are the Pacers, the
better Wizards. Than the Pacers, better than the Wizards,
the Warriors, and the Grizzlies.
Now that Steph is gone, I'm taking the Nets over the Warriors.
And then the other teams with worse records are the Pelicans, Thunder, Kings, Knicks, Bulls. The Nets are better.
Every single team you just named, the Nets are better than. Easily.
And better than half the teams that have better records than them, too. They're just...
Aren't the Timberwolves like 3-1?
Yes, they just lost their first game.
There's no way. Like, saying that the Nets are going to be bad because they're 1-3 is like saying that the Timberwolves are going to be the number one seed in the West because they're 3-1. The first four games of the NBA season, a lot can happen, and please take everything you see with a grain of salt.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that there are five locks in the East right now.
Which are going to be
the Sixers, Heat, Raptors, Celtics, Bucks are the, not in that order, but those are the five current locks.
And Sixers, Heat, Raptors. You think the Heat are a lock for the playoffs?
Yes. Especially with Kendrick Nunn. coming onto the scene with them playing Dragic and Hero off the bench, definitely. They have a complete roster.
Yeah, I think the Sixers, the Heat, the Celtics,
the Raptors are 4-1. They are still a good team.
The Bucks. I'll say the Raptors. I don't want to say they're a lock, but
they're a lock for the
playoffs. There's a good chance they make the playoffs. Magic,
Cavs, and Hornets, and Pistons that are there right now. And then the Nets will make it. There's no doubt in my mind they will turn it around and make it.
They'll easily turn it around and make it. So those are our first impressions of the Nets 4 games into the season. Just to recap, really bad on defense, really good on offense. Free throws and turnovers need to be fixed ASAP. But wait, before we move on, I just want to say that last year, they were also bottom 8 in free throw percentage and bottom 5 in turnovers. It's just hurting them.
That was early in the season, because if you remember, around the time they were 8-18, we would look at the turnovers team stat, and they were last.
Exactly. It's just hurting them more this season because they're not clicking on defense. Like, the Nets have been bad at free throws and turnovers for a good while now, but people are taking it to the extreme because they have these high expectations because we got Kyrie and KD. But let's calm it down, and we'll be fine. So moving on to the Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan relationship. A lot of people thought to themselves, why bring in DeAndre Jordan this offseason if we already have a player who's theoretically the same type of player in Jared Allen?
One question. Do you want Kevin Durant?
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was going to say. Because
if they told Kevin Durant no, he probably was not coming.
That's part one of it. Obviously, if you're bringing in Kyrie and Kevin Durant, you're going to do whatever they say. You're going to get whatever guy they want.
Garrett Temple and KD said bring in DeAndre Jordan.
It doesn't matter who they said bring in.
Difficult demands.
The only player that they didn't bring in that they might have wanted was Melo. But a lot of stuff comes with Melo. Like, Melo comes with a lot of baggage. So that's something that is a completely different story. But DeAndre Jordan, he was signed primarily for two reasons. One being Kyrie and KD wanted him, so the Nets went and got him. As simple as that. Second reason being to mentor and compete with Jared Allen. So DeAndre Jordan is averaging 21.3 minutes per game, and Jared Allen is averaging 27.8. Last year, he played 26.2, so there's not a huge jump in his minutes. Theoretically, like I said, they're the same kind of big man, so you can't play them together. So that's why a lot of people are wondering, why, like, what was the point? DeAndre Jordan is at the stage of his career where he's lost some of the athleticism he once had, but now he can give Jared Allen all of the wisdom that he's learned throughout all of his years in the NBA.
And I believe they had Ed Davis last year, right? Davis was a great locker room presence, great rebounder, but he wasn't an All-NBA center. DeAndre Jordan is a three-time All-NBA center.
Exactly, and that's what people forget. DeAndre Jordan has made an All-NBA team three times.
He was a great center, and he's still good. He's not bad by any means. He's good. And talking about lobs from before, if someone's throwing up a lob, I still trust DeAndre Jordan
to slam it down. That's what I'm saying. He's lost some of his athleticism on the defensive end, but he can still go up for a lob with anybody in the league. I don't care. DeAndre Jordan,
having an All-NBA center mentor, someone that you want to become an All-NBA center, is a lot better than Ed Davis.
Exactly. There was nowhere to go but up.
But DeAndre Jordan's kind of the perfect person due to their similar play styles, the shot blocking ability, athleticism, all of that stuff.
It's like a big brother, little brother relationship. That's the best way that I can put it. DeAndre Jordan being the big brother, Jared Allen being the little brother, and him teaching him, mentoring him, teaching him all of the things that he's learned. That's why DeAndre Jordan was bought in. But also, he was bought in to be some type of competition, because when you think about it, like you just said, who has Jared Allen been competing with? Other than himself, really.
Like, Ed Davis was always secure in the backup role, and Jared Allen, like, yes, of course he's young and he's going to try and play well always, but he never really had anyone that would take his spot. So he always felt comfortable.
Exactly.
Now, if he has a bad game and doesn't show effort, they could just bring in DeAndre Jordan. You don't have to play.
Exactly. He'll never feel comfortable. Like, the way you stated it is perfect, because I feel like if you don't bring in any competition behind Jared Allen, he'll start to feel like, oh, all right, I got this job locked up no matter how I play, because what's the alternative for the Nets?
Yes, you want him to feel comfortable on the team, but you don't want him to think that...
To be content in the way that he's playing, to think that that he can't get better, you know?
You always want him to want to get better. That's the point. And DeAndre Jordan will push him to do that for sure.
Exactly. So, in short, they brought him in for competition, one, to be a mentor to Jared Allen and teach him the ways, two. And three, obviously, because when Kyrie and KD say they want somebody, you go out and get that person. So with that, we want to thank everybody for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the Hoopball Nets podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast. I can guarantee you that we are. So just search up Brooklyn Nets or Hoopball Nets. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star rating and review. All reviews will get read on the podcast. If you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, it's at Hoopball Nets. And if you want to shoot us a follow, our little Twitter links are in the description. So just go down there and click that. And yeah, without further ado, we'll see you all next time.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.